heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
You know, the most important thing to talk about up front with the killing of al-Baghdadi to me is timing. Timing is everything, people. Remember that. Timing is everything. And I think it should not be lost on you, certainly not lost on me. The fact that President Trump scored the victory at this moment of time is quite fascinating, because you see how momentum changes quickly in Washington. You see how fast things change, and it sizes things up real quick. And I'm going to say something here that's not going to be very popular, probably not very nice, but I'm going to say it anyways. And it's this. The Democrats, the Democrat leadership, I can assure you, they were not happy to see this moment of time. But this was a wrench thrown into their plans. At a time, at an opportune time, they did not really need this victory for the president, because it showed a lot of things, people. It showed that his hands are right where they need to be. It shows that he can multitask like there's no tomorrow, as he's under siege there in the Oval Office and taking on a tidal wave and a tsunami of BS. So it shows a lot of things. But just remember that, timing being everything. And I don't think that the Democrat leadership was happy at all for this victory for America. But then again, people, I mean, come on. Everything that's happening right now, does anybody in their right mind, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, or Communists alike, does anybody think that what they're doing right now in the Republic, that they're doing for the good of the country? Does anybody think that, anybody, show of hands, please, think that that's what they're doing right now? Yeah, you bet. Exactly. So, no, they're not happy that this happened either. But, yeah, it was a victory for America, first and foremost. It was a victory for the world, clearly. In fact, that's really where we should start. I mean, people, the maim and the murders and the... This guy was obviously a brother or a cousin, or he was a disciple of Satan, clearly. I mean, he was part of Satan's camp. Obviously, you can't do those kinds of things on the planet here, people, and not be part of Satan's mandate. So obviously, this guy, he created a reign of terror like there was no. I mean, he was the number one person. Imagine this, on the planet, on planet Earth, this planet you're on right here. Yeah, he was the number one dude, the most wanted that they were looking for on the planet. Everybody would have liked to have captured him and killed him. So let's keep that in focus as well. So it all started really Saturday evening late with that tweet, very ominous tweet. Something very big has just happened. Everybody waited with bated breath to see what was going to happen after that, because typically the president would have a follow-up tweet. And I waited and I waited. In fact, I kept the Twitter feed open. You probably did as well. I kept it on his feed. I wanted to know exactly what big had just happened. And I waited. About an hour. And then I thought, maybe he's waiting, because, you know, the president, he's a showman. He's probably waiting for it to go over 100,000, I thought. Okay, so once we get over 100, he's going to release it. And still nothing. You started seeing some other reports leak out about al-Baghdadi, and then you recognize that was probably what he was talking about. But obviously, when that tweet hit, it could have been about anything here. So here was the result. The president speaks on Sunday morning, big talk there, and addresses the nation. And he says that, that's where he announced the death of al-Baghdadi. He did it very descriptively, to the demise of many that were unsettled with that. But again, people, these are the same people that don't want to use the word radical or terrorist or extremist or whatever, you know. So he was murdered. They found him in Idlib, Syria. They've been searching for this. I mean, this has been a long, long search, but they've been tracking him down for the past 2 or 3 weeks, basically, here. And he was tracked down by Delta Force and Army Rangers and the sniffing dogs. You heard that, the canines and all. We know the story there, but he ran into one of the unfinished tunnels, and pretty dumb, actually, if you think about it. Not a smart intellect if you're running into an unfinished tunnel. Can't be too bright, huh? And of course, the president described what that last few moments was for this man. Something that was very vivid that a lot of presidents would not have done. But then again, people, this is a president who speaks very frankly, very directly, like it or leave it. He is not politically correct. And that's the way he speaks to the American public. And quite frankly, the American public likes it. I know the political class don't like it and the rest of them, but that's what happened. So al-Baghdadi blew himself up with his three kids. Of course, being a real man, he took his kids and murdered his kids. But would that surprise anybody? It doesn't surprise me for a hot second. Like some people, oh, they're astonished. Like, oh, he blew his, like, what? So, like, does that mean anything? I mean, the guy has no value of life. So why does that mean anything to you? I mean, come on. You know, really. So Nancy Pelosi, the esteemed speaker there from hellhole San Francisco, where she's corrupted that city, on a mission to corrupt the rest of the nation, the same way she's done her own city there, right? She says the House must be briefed on this raid. She said, adding that our military and allies deserve strong, smart, and strategic leadership from Washington. And so the House must be briefed. So her answer back was to slap the president with the House must be briefed on this raid. Now, the president came out and he said in the press conference that Pelosi and other congressional leaders were not informed about the raid beforehand due to potential leaks. You think so? That could imperil the operation. He said, and I quote, "We were going to notify them last night, but we decided not to do that because Washington leaks like I've never seen before. There's no country in the world that leaks like we do," he says. "We're like a Washington's a leaking machine." And he said that leak could have possibly cost American lives. And that's a given. That's a given, people. But, you know, it's amazing to me that this gets really rich now. Really, really rich, people. Okay. And I start to see a lot of the reports. And right away, you see that the left is going to take anything they can, again, because, again, tomorrow morning, the report comes out. The president found the answer in the riddle to solve cancer and just saved millions of lives. You know, they would find all kinds of things wrong with that. And they would just laugh and ridicule at that president. There is nothing he could do, friends. Not a thing. I could make a lot of comparisons to that, but I'm not going to. But you start seeing the news reports, you start seeing the various pieces come out, and you immediately see the ideology and the agenda that people have and how sick it is. And the fact that they don't celebrate America. The media doesn't celebrate America. The far left doesn't celebrate America. These people are self-grandizing, power-seeking, disgusting leeches, parasites on the American system is what they are. Really and truly they are. Well, it gets even more fascinating to me because, so listen to this point here. So The Guardian, I love reading these publications. So The Guardian comes out with a piece here and they say, in a break with President, Trump excluded senior Democrats on the so-called Gang of Eight, the group of congressional leaders who by law are to be informed of covert operations that are ordered by the U.S. president from all operational intelligence. Those cut out of the loop include Pelosi, the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, Adam Schiff, who chairs the House Intelligence Committee. Yeah, sure. So they expect, so he's being ridiculed on multiple fronts about not following president. Now, these are the same people that don't want to follow president with trying to impeach his ass out of office. Now, how rich is that to you all? But they expect the president to follow president when they don't follow president. But he's supposed to follow president and include them. Wow. I mean, do you see what's going on here, the game? So they slapped the president with this, how dare you do this? Well, of course, you know, Pelosi has this figment of her imagination that she's going to be the future president somehow, that maybe something will happen to the president, to the vice president, and she'll be anointed the new president possibly, or back to that co-equal branches of government. And the president, again, there's nothing in the Constitution that says the president has to notify her happy ass about what, just as she doesn't notify the president what she's doing. Did she notify the president to get his permission when she flew off to the Middle East to talk and all deal with all this business behind his back? I wonder what was that for president? Yeah, really. It works both ways, people, you know. The amount of richness in all of this, and I got to read you this here too, funny. Mitt Romney says, it's just, he's a laughing stock. So he's just a quick laugh. So he's worth taking 2 seconds on, you know. He says, al-Baghdadi spread fire and brimstone on earth. Now he feels it for himself in hell. He says, to all who arranged his change of venue, the intel officers, the president, the warriors, thank you. Shut up, Romney. Does anybody really care what he thinks? I mean, thank you, Mr. President. Shut up, Romney. You are a loser. Nobody cares what you say. Crawl back under your rock. You are just a multiple disgrace, the man is. Senator Lindsey Graham comes out. He says, Trump's worst critics should hail the announcement. Last night, the best of America confronted the worst of mankind, and the good guys won. Now, he said that in a press conference. He says, this is a moment where President Trump's worst critics should say, well done, Mr. President. Yeah, what a joke, huh? Well done, Mr. President. Friends, they hadn't even flown the helicopter off yet. It's not well done, Mr. President. It's let me see what we can find wrong with what you did, Mr. President. Let's say how we can score political points, Mr. President. Let's say how we think you should follow some sort of precedent, Mr. President. But we don't want to follow anything, Mr. President. I mean, isn't that what it's all about, people? Is this lost on anybody? The richness of any of this? And how sick it is? These people, it's beyond the pale. It's almost, it is laughable. It's disgraceful. It's sickening. It would be an SNL skit or it would be a late night comic thing if it wasn't so important. It would be funny, but it's not funny because it's way too important. And what they're doing to this country, you know, there are certain words that come to mind. Traitor is one of them. There's a whole lot of other words too, which we'll leave silent here at the moment, huh? And of course, people on social media were pretty hot and heavy. Of course, one guy, tweet from General, says, Trump notified Russia, not Congress, before Baghdadi raid, which turned out to be a brilliant move because the Democrats would have leaked it. Now, what he was referring to there is that as they were crossing multiple countries, he had to notify multiple countries that they were coming in. Now, the other thing about this that I want to ask Jim and Alana as we get rolling here in just moments here is that you realize, obviously, well, okay, so luck was on our side, probably. Fate was on our side, probably. God was on our side, absolutely. Now, something, anything, one thing, anything could have gone wrong. I mean, this was a very dangerous mission. And you realize, think about everything that had to go perfectly for like everything to happen like it happened, flawlessly, and the information we got out of them. Now, how serious this is, think about all that. And then realize the special operations officers in the military that we have, and then just, you see where I'm at, do the math quickly and understand. This was heroic, and the president is heroic. And to me, there's only one way we could have pulled this off, and that's with the blessing of God Almighty, because to pull off everything the way that happened, people, and for there to be, we escaped any casualties. We had a canine that was hurt, who's going to be okay, by the way. And that was it. And the information and the trove, the treasure chest we got is priceless. And more than that is the murder of this leader. And now hopefully they'll seek number two, number three, number four, number five, number six, number seven, number eight, number nine, number 10, and so on, and kill the rest of these horrible bastards from the planet and get rid of Satan's disciples at that table. Remember what I started with, timing. Everything's timing. This message that the president just put down there, that if anybody thought we were retreating from the planet because of the troop for those 50 folks that were changed in Syria, if that was the headline that you read from the far left publications, joke is on you, people. And the president jammed that right down your throat by saying American leadership is stronger than it's been, and we're here, and we're going to take it down, and we're going to go to the far reaches of the earth, and we're going to find your happy ass. That was the message, people, for everybody. That's my opening bell, people. Now we'll get the real lowdown here from Colonel Jim Warshak and Ilana Friedman.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-tasting gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com. So again, as I address up front, I do believe timing is everything. And this was a major victory for President Trump at a time that not only did he needed it, but the country needed it. And the one takeaway, it should not be lost on any of us when something like this happens. To me, it should be a moment of time to remind all of us, you know, even if it's only for seconds, sometimes. It'd be nice if it lasted for hours or days, you know. But the reminder that we are all Americans, you remember I talked to you the other day about the fact that we really don't want to be looking at this as Democrats and Republicans anymore, is my message to you. I ask you please to look at this as Americans versus the operation, the political establishment. That's what I'm really asking you to bring the fight to. That'll reshape the fight here we have in our country. If you stop fighting as political parties and fight with the political class, as Americans as a whole. That's my message to you. And so that's where we start today and talking about the timing on all this. Now, this Baghdadi dude was Colonel Warshak. He was obviously the most, as I say, he was the number one most wanted. You know, I think, Jim, about the old posters they used to put up at the post office, remember, most wanted, right? This guy was like the post office of the world because everybody wanted him dead. So what would have happened if Russia or Turkey or somebody else would have come across him first before us? What would have happened, Jim?
Well, that's a really good question. If Russia or Turkey did that, they probably would have done the same thing. They would have taken the effort to terminate him. I don't see any reason. He was just as much their enemy. For Russia, who is supporting Bashar al-Assad in Syria, ISIS and al-Baghdadi were certainly a threat to him, and Russia is an ally in acting and serving in that country. They would have done that, and most likely Turkey would have done the same thing. I want to make one little correction to the timing thing. You're exactly right where you said timing is everything, and it put a wrench into the work, certainly from a standpoint of political political activity to the Democrats. But Trump had nothing to do with the timing. Trump did not say, okay, next week on Saturday evening, I want to take this guy out. We need to do it now because this will give a boost to my current political situation. Timing was brought to us because things came together from the intelligence standpoint, and they were able to, and the commanders and SOCOM and CENTCOM and all the commands involved, we're able to take that intel and put it into an operation and have enough confidence that the timing was correct to do it. They had a fix on him. The guy was a pretty elusive guy. He would change on a dime on what he would do on any given day. So, you know, this mission was already canceled twice. They had the guy in their sights for roughly a month. You know, it just came down to all the right pieces and parts and everything coming together. You know, we chased Osama bin Laden for 10 years. There was no delay. People worked. I was part of that effort. I've been on many of these type missions and planned many types of them. You know, when it's ready to go and everything comes together and the confidence is there and the ability to ensure the likelihood of success, all that dictates when these go down. If anyone had a hand in timing, it was God who made it happen the way it happened. And you covered that very illustratively in your opening. The mission went down. It was, we've been looking for the guy for many years. The interesting part was why he went to Western Syria, and most of it was because the areas where he operated around Raqqa and in Eastern Syria were pretty much in control of either the U.S., Syria, Russia to some extent, and he needed a new place to start operating. And that area was pretty remote, a desert region, some mountains and hills, and the actual compound was 3 miles south of the Turkish border. And, you know, all I could say is he determined that that was probably the most secure location that he could operate out of without being identified. And much to his chagrin, it turned out not. The intel community, when we've heard a lot of negative stuff about the intel community and how Obama was using it and using it to spy on Americans. And we had people who were pro-Obama, deep state people, and everything worked like clockwork with the intel community and the military folks, many of who are one and the same. And the level and degree of information that was put forth to develop and plan this mission worked extremely well. Not a lot of glitches. Like I said, there were a couple postponements, but everything worked well. And that says a lot to, you know, how things are being handled in the intel community, and the new national security advisor and Gina Haspel at CIA and the folks on the military side of intelligence. And
you know, her name doesn't come up much anymore. You don't hear Gina Haspel's name anymore in the public, you know, really.
Well, because she's a professional and she's there as a public servant to do her job. She's not there to have her name in the news and
necessarily for the
limelight.
The
notoriety.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's the way we kind of expect it to be.
Yeah, you hope like hell, but it doesn't always happen that way. But I like what you say there, because I notice maybe that's the sign of actually an effective leader like that, Jim, when you don't, they're not always in the news, because a lot of these cats are always looking for the camera or the microphone, you know? And but you don't see that with her, really. So
and the other aspect of where I said this wasn't politically timed. Yeah. If they had him in their sights and the planners and the senior generals and admirals at CENTCOM and SOCOM and the joint staff who would be totally tied into this planning aspect saw that he was there, and Trump said, well, we're going to wait because I want to make sure timing is just right because of what's going on. They would have leaked. They would have come out and says, okay, we had the opportunity to take this guy out and we didn't because the powers that be in the White House said, hold off. We got to wait for it. We want that. When the opportunity came to go, they did what they had to do, the best that they could do. And that's what happened.
Well,
you don't mess around on these kind of things.
No, you don't mess around, number one. But number two, I mean, as I pointed out in the opening remarks, Jim, why would the president even give any level of respect back to these cats when they've given him no respect? I mean, come on. I mean, I wouldn't call them. I'm going to give them the time of day.
Yeah, and you know, the other big piece of misinformation out there is, and certainly Pelosi and company are starting to politicize it. We did not tell Russia or Turkey or any foreign power.
That's right.
Oh, by the way, we're coming in tonight to take out al-Baghdadi. All we did through our air traffic control channels was say, we're going to be flying some missions in this area of the country. Just let you know who they are. And they passed all the ATC information, and that's the notification. By the way, we're going to be in the area, so if you see anything, we come up on your radar, it's us. We didn't advertise or tell them what we were doing.
And that's an important point to make.
That's a big misnomer on the part of the Democrats.
It's an important point to make, because a lot of the headlines I'm seeing right now, oh, the president told Russia before he told us, and which is a total lie. But again, everything you read out there, people, from all the vast 90%, 90-something percent of all the garbage you're reading is garbage. I mean, period. Ilana, so I want to talk to you more about the history of how we got here. I want to inform people a little bit about ISIS? Because you have a tremendous read up there. ISIS leader dies, not with a bang, but a whimper. But I want to read this to folks now that you say in here and have you opine and educate all of us a little bit on this. You say here, in the absence of effective leadership to stop it, ISIS grew increasingly powerful. And while the world yawned and went back to sleep, the growing slaughter of innocents turned into genocide. Taking advantage of the vacuum created by the weak policies of the West and the unwillingness of Western leaders to engage against it, ISIS moved into Syria, where it joined the fight against the Assad government, then swept back into Iraq and thrived. ISIS fighters cut a swath of wanton destruction, suffering, and death, leaving behind them a trail of misery and despair as they surged across the Middle East and North Africa.
This movement, this organization, was founded by a man named Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. He was a Jordanian terrorist, and he went to he had the opportunity to go to Osama bin Laden and tell him about his idea to start a terrorist group in Iraq. And he got permission to do that, and the organization, which he called the Islamic State, well, it had many names, but the Islamic State of Iraq was one of its early names. And he began this group, and it started to grow, and it became a dangerous group in Iraq of terrorists. But he was killed by a U.S. airstrike on his safe house in 2006. Hmm. And then he was replaced in his own organization, the one he founded, by two other men who also were killed in a nighttime raid on their safe house in 2010, 4 years later. And they were succeeded by Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi.
Ilana, you say in here as well, the Iraqi military had 30,000 soldiers stationed in Mosul. Yet when 1,000 ISIS fighters came into the city, they fled, leaving their weapons behind and their armories unsecured. ISIS overran the city. They sacked the central bank and made off with $42 million worth of gold, bullion, and cash. This made ISIS the richest terrorist group in the world. And then you go on to say, and I remember the stories about this, the small ISIS army also helped themselves to huge stores of U.S. weaponry and vehicles. And I remember that happening, and I was outraged at the time, including a fleet, listen to this people, of 2,300 Humvees valued at $1 billion, tanks, 40 tanks, machine guns, I mean, all kinds of equipment. And I remember this ammunition and all that was left behind for the Iraqi military by the departing U.S. troops, by us. This was a major factor in this as well. But you
know, what happened first was that they took cover under other terrorist organizations. And a lot of the events that were perpetrated by ISIS fighters, ISIS terrorists, were actually blamed on Assad's soldiers. And I mentioned that also in the article because that's really important. This is how ISIS got its legs. And once it had established, and all of these murders that I was talking about, the mass graves and the rooms with dead women and children, these became the logo, if you will, for ISIS. Murder, mayhem, and abject cruelty. And once they really got their legs, they formed this organization, and they actually tried to join with another terrorist group, but didn't happen. What happened instead is that the caliphate was established. This is when Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi took power, and he assumed the position of caliph for all Muslims everywhere in the world. And this was the beginning of ISIS as a massive organization. Now, they were still underfunded, massively underfunded. So they moved from northern Syria, where he established his capital in Raqqa, and they took their troops, 1,000 troops, and they sent them into Iraq and marched them down to Mosul, and they destroyed everything in their wake. They destroyed churches. They took over Christian cities that had been there for centuries, mm-hmm. and they destroyed their churches, and they stole their valuables, and they sent the Christians who had been living, whose families had been there for generations, and they sent them packing with the clothes on their back. And then they moved into Mosul, and they did what you just described, which was to completely rob the city of all of its gold, a huge amount of gold, and also the military equipment that we had left for the Iraqi army. And they took that and they created these long convoys of all these vehicles, these military vehicles, with and all of them contain, you know, holding soldiers very, very well armed. And these convoys moved into throughout Iraq and even across northern Syria all the way over to the coast. And we saw these convoys from the air, and President Obama did nothing. I kept saying to my staff, I said, hey, guys, where are our planes? Why aren't we taking out these convoys? And nothing happened. Obama did nothing. Yeah. And that is how ISIS became so powerful, because they had the money now. They were now, from the day before they went to Mosul to the day after they went to Mosul, they became the rich. They went from one of the poorest to the richest terrorist organization in the world.
Yeah, that's true.
And this is how they got to be who they were.
I don't hear anybody speaking right now of the abomination that President Obama created out there. The reason we, you know, and I remember going through all of those steps, and you remember you seeing the videos and the photographs, people like Lana just described, of all the them coming in with those black flags and the terror they were wreaking everywhere. And it was a mess. Not only that, people, but you remember they also had multiple Americans. They had that one of the ladies, young ladies, Kayla Mueller there, who was out there on a goodwill mission to help. And she lost her life, and she became a horribly tortured and raped multiple times for this Baghdadi dude. And then you had multiple other Americans that were beheaded and captured. And so this is kind of how that all happened. But I think it's been lost on a lot of people that history will show, and this is important, people, is that this is credited to the Obama administration. I don't say that to be a wise guy here. I don't say that to be anything other than factual. That's where that came from right there. And I say that to, and if you disagree with what I say, let me remind you, President Barack Obama had referred to all of these activities as the junior varsity team. This was the JV team, right? This was a nothing thing. And this was not a problem at all as they were creating this terror. And again, I remember seeing all of this in the videos and the photographs and thinking, you know, there were some people who thought the world was coming to an end. I mean, it was that gross and that graphic and that disgusting that human beings were doing this, and we were all seeing it in the light of day. And as Alana just said, yet nothing was happening. And then people were saying, well, where's the president? Why isn't he doing anything? What's going on here? And then as she says, the void of leadership in the West. Oh, yeah. And that void of leadership in the West started in Washington, D.C. That's where that started. And then it just permeated from there around the rest of the world, because they all ran like cowards at that point, friends. God, I'll tell you what, there's a history of that. But then there's even another piece of history, which I'm going to ask Colonel Warshak to explain in moments here, but because there's another point of the Obama administration, which was how he cozied up to Iran, the relationship that was happening with the Republic of Iran and what was taking place there while all this was going on. And then you have to question, you have to ask yourself, who the hell side was he on anyways?
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
So as we continue to peel here, I want to talk a little bit more about Colonel Warshak, the Obama connection, and the fact that you, again, have a very fascinating piece up that I want to bring people's attention to that I think is one of the best. Syria, When the Dust Settled, The Truth Once Again Reveals the Hand of Obama. This is, if you want to be educated, people, as to what's going on in short order, go read Colonel Warshak's pieces and read Alana Friedman's and get educated on what's going on. That's the best way to do it, because you'll get a history lessons in there and understand what's going on in today's political circles as well. But this piece here is a must read, the Syria one. And you talk about the lie and the deception, Jim, basically. But here's what I want to say to you, and then fill us in on the blanks here. You say here, President Trump made his decision after fully analyzing and understanding the overall situation. This was the big, this was the situation, people, of the change in Syria strategy recently with the Kurds. And we've heard the uproar from coast to coast here now at this point. And I go back to what Jim says here, which was the correct decision in a long time coming. The president's move then should be seen in the context of his efforts to undo Obama administration policies, particularly its initiative to tilt away from traditional U.S. allies and toward the Islamic Republic of Iran. And when I read that, Jim, I started thinking more about what Iran was up to, because we know the terror they wreak around the Middle East and around the world. And then I started thinking, and then you think about that bad agreement that he created with Iran, and you see the other things he did in his administration. Pick it up from there and tell us of the crux of the history of what President Obama was up to. Let's get to the bottom line of what he was up to with Iran and how that fit into this narrative, Jim.
Well, you have to go back to certainly the beginning of the Obama administration and what had been in place in the region. And when I say the region, I mean the Middle East and the greater Middle East, if you will, when you go into North Africa and all the Islamic nations there. Early on in the Obama administration, we started to hear a term called, let me back up a little bit. We first saw Obama go to Cairo in June 2009 and start his apology tour and apologize to all the Arab and Middle Eastern nations that everything there was essentially the U.S.'s fault. Everything that had happened was all the U.S.'s fault. And then we heard this new term called the Arab Spring. You know, most people looked at it as, well, this is a good thing. This is bringing democracy to the regions. It had nothing to do with that. This was an effort to topple all previous allies of the United States and essentially give greater authority to Iran. You know, we watched Mubarak get toppled. Not that Gaddafi was an ally, but he was coming around after all these years, and he started providing us intelligence on al-Qaeda, and he was being turned and developed, and we had Hillary and Clinton and company do that. And then we had the civil war start up in 2010 in Syria, and suddenly the Obama administration decided they wanted to get involved in that. And as Alana was saying, all at the same time, ISIS was evolving as a result of us removing al-Qaeda from Iraq and not that they had a big hold in Syria, but all this was at play with the Obama administration. And the Obama administration's first effort in Syria was to create a force to counter the situation. And at the peak of the Civil War, there were 32 insurgent groups either defending Assad or trying to topple Assad. And you had the Obama administration come in and create a force called the Syrian Democratic Force, which were basically made up of Syrian Kurds who were Marxists. And that decision to pick them as the force to side, train, and arm came out of the Obama NSC and White House, i.e. Hillary Clinton, Ben Rhodes, and a few others who said, well, we've got to go with a force that essentially is more to our liking and supportive of us. And this group here is Marxist, they're communists. We're going to side with them, and that brought us to utilizing them to be allies with us against ISIS in Syria, which we really didn't do a lot. And the SDF, the Syrian Democratic Force, a lot of times they sided with ISIS, they trained with ISIS, they recruited ISIS soldiers. So they really were not a good force. There is a big misconception, misnomer, what we heard in recent weeks about the U.S. abandoning the Kurds. The Kurds that the U.S. supported and worked well with were the Kurds in northern Iraq, in Mosul, in Erbil, in the green area, what we call the Kurdish area of Iraq. Those are the Kurds that are loyal allies to the U.S. So when you say Kurds, there's lots of factions of them, and certainly the ones in Syria weren't our friends. But the political will, as always, tends not to put the right story out or the right.
Well, Jim, that's lost on a lot of people, what you say. I'm so glad when you talk about that, and you talked about it in the article as well with the Kurds and defining that, because that's lost on everybody when you say that. And I was seeing a lot of reports recently, in fact, where you said the Marxist Kurds, and that was kind of like you do a 180 and think, you know, but there's a lot more to the story is what you're saying. That, again, this is why people got to be careful what you're reading out there and what you're taking in, because they don't really get the
absolutely. And, if you look what was going on and what Obama was doing, and Ilana very eloquently laid all that out, he wasn't really doing a lot. He was keeping us involved, keeping us engaged, you know, spending the DOD industrial complex dollars to provide arms and weapons, but we weren't really getting anything done. Yeah. We were essentially spinning our wheels, you know, and it wasn't until President Trump came in and says, look, okay, our mission is destroy ISIS and get out. And that's what he did. And, you know, if the timing, going back to that word, was right, it was, we were pulling out of Iraq and we declared that ISIS was pretty much dead. And the only thing missing was taking out al-Baghdadi. And that all came in proper sequence, probably, as I said, more coincidentally than planned, but it worked out. I mean, you know, this, when you look at the grand scheme of things, it looks really good for Trump. It looks like he did, in fact, plan it that way. It works out. Now, what next?
The Trump doctrine. Here's something I want people to be aware of here. You mentioned the Arab Spring a moment ago here. You mentioned a lot of the leaders, Gaddafi, you have Mubarak, you have a lot. The whole, and everybody remembers the Arab Spring, what was happening. And for a while, everybody thought that was like a glimmer of hope somehow. But here was the problem, people. The problem was, again, that America was out there trying to, you know, call it whatever you want, policing people, trying to push some sort of different values on people, which is never going to work. I mean, if we haven't learned that lesson yet in 243 years, when the hell are we going to learn it, people? We never seem to learn that lesson. Our values are our values. We're not going to be able to push them on everybody else around the planet. But our political leaders don't get that point. Now, what's interesting about the Trump doctrine, I think, gang, is that what he's doing, he's saying, wait a minute, we're not going to police these things. We're going to step back a little bit. And sometimes that may, you know, you may have to do a second to gulp, or you may have to get others involved or figure it out. But we're still going to have the strongest military in the world, and we're going to be able to do special ops sort of things and be very strategic and more, how would I say, probably more nimble. We're going to be more, that's my word, but we're going to be more nimble as a force and be more strategic. So now you're being more strategic, people. Now that can't be a bad thing, as opposed to just, you know, killing our men and women and throw them out there, God knows to what mercy, all over the place. And God knows there's enough troubled areas in the world. So here's the biggest thing I want to say to you all, and Ilana and Jim as well, is that what I see from my vantage point as a journalist, as a layman in this, is that I look at the Trump doctrine as a big change of policy. Because what Obama was doing was, again, what a lot of American politicians have done, quite frankly, which is police the world, which is push our values on others. And that was that whole Arab Spring thing that everybody thought was a good thing. And we were pushing the whole agenda, and these leaders were toppling. But yeah, but then you created this vacuum, which created the world's, as Alana referred to it, as a genocide, for heaven's sake. And so now you see what I mean, gang, about the Trump doctrine, how important this is. I think this is a moment of time, Jim, Ilana, about what Trump has done here to reformulate and recalibrate, if you will, American foreign policy, American foreign might. Am I wrong or am I right with that assessment, Jim?
Oh, absolutely right. And even Trump talked about that. He said, we are going to spend our defense dollars and we are going to build up the most powerful military as a deterrent so that no one ever attempts to go after us again, because they know if they did, they'd be squashed in you know, a matter of minutes or days or whatever. Not to go out and look for fights around the world. We're not going to get involved in long-term endless wars. That was the word he used, okay, where we don't accomplish anything. We're not going to do 18 years in Afghanistan anymore. You know, if you go back and look at what happened when we militarily, put that in quotations, we went into Iraq in 2003. We destroyed the Iraqi military in a matter of weeks from start to finish. The military was done. What failed in Iraq was the follow-on and the policy that came into play, where we went eventually into nation building and everything else, and we remained there for until 2011, so to speak. Right. And the same thing in Afghanistan. We wiped out the Taliban and the elements of Al-Qaeda in 6 months from start to finish. And we could have been out of there. And of course, everybody worried, well, they might come back. We better keep a residual force here. And that force grew to 100,000, and the same thing in Iraq. And we've got into this old mindset of some type of occupation or whatever. The argument was, well, we've been in Germany for 70 years and we've been in Japan for 70 years. We're not running the country. We're not running the government. We keep a few bases there for the purpose of power projection, and that's okay. Being somewhere and we always look at, we want to fight. If we have to fight somebody, we want to do it on their territory, not on American soil. The reason we are able to do these missions like we did this weekend is because we have forward basing. Forward basing is not occupation. Right. It's utilizing a base to get you closer. So you don't have to, I'll go one example if I have time here. In 1995, we learned when we went after the Achille Lauro terrorist, and we had to fly Delta Force 18 hours on a plane from Fort Bragg to the Mediterranean, 18 hours, and then expect them to potentially go do a mission. That's the reason we have forward deploy people. We move them to a base somewhere, and then they're rested and ready to go. Yeah. You know, this flight over the weekend was an hour and 10 minutes long,
right,
before they went into action. So we need that kind of capability.
Yeah,
but
he
we don't need
some of that.
Yeah, we don't need to have 50,000, 100,000 troops occupying and doing nation building a country.
Yeah, and that's what that was a really big point that the president referenced in the change of strategy with Syria itself. Now, Ilana, I want to ask you something here. You were, as most, were very critical of the president's decision with the Kurds. You were actually on the opposite side of some of that than Colonel Warshak for different reasons strategically here. Talk to me on where we're at now. We're talking about the Trump doctrine here. We're talking about a shift and change of strategy. Now, seeing with what's happening with al-Baghdadi, what are your feelings now in that this thing has evolved to where we're at now? Thoughts, follow-up thoughts on that?
When the first news broke about our withdrawal from Syria, I was disturbed on two counts. Whatever the political aspirations and core beliefs of the Kurds in northern Syria, they were working with the U.S. military to try to clear out ISIS fighters and terrorists, and they did a pretty good job together. And so what I saw in the first place was that Turkey was ready to put all their force into an assault on the Kurds, who have been their generations-long enemy. And we were pulling out. That did not seem to be the right move in terms of our relationship with those Kurds at that time. The second thing that bothered me was that it looked like retreat. And in the Middle East, when you see right. retreat, you see it as a weakness. So those were my original objections. What I have learned since then, and in the following week, you know, I wrote another article in which I
That's right.
corrected some of these assumptions that I made.
Right.
The main thing for me was that there is so much chaos on the ground. In Syria, you had Russia and Iran and Iraq on it because Syria is on the Iraqi border, and you had Iranian militia massing up on the on the Iraqi Syrian border, and then you had Russia involved, and you had Turkey and the Kurds and the United States and the Syrians. That's an awful lot of players in a very small area of real estate. Yeah. So I was very concerned, and I remain concerned that some of this chaos was influencing the reports that we were getting.
Well, the public perception, Ilana, of what you say there is very accurate. And let me feed to you something here. The public perception, and you're right, if the actors in that region determine that it's a retreat, you're exactly right. And I have to tell you, that was the feeling most everybody had. Let's be clear of something right now. Your thoughts and your ideas that you put out there were not far at all from the reality of what everybody was feeding and kind of what everybody felt based on business as usual, quite frankly. However, the juxtaposition of this right now, that's why I said up front to all of you, the timing of al-Baghdadi is so significant. I'm not just talking about the political ramifications in Washington, although that is plenty there to chew on, people, that you can figure out for yourself, as I already stated. But I'm talking about the ramifications around the world and certainly in the Middle East and with strategic players, because Jim, Ilana, this reminded everybody. Ilana, to your point a moment ago here, this reminded everybody. The al-Baghdadi thing is a moment of time because it reminds everybody America is not retreating from a damn thing. And clearly, Ilana, you'll have to admit, that is better for our blood, our men and women, and our treasure, the trillions of dollars we have pissed away to these hellholes out there and have gotten nothing in return. What do you say to that, Ilana?
I agree with you completely. I think in my second article about this, yeah. I made the point that the president is playing a long game.
Amen.
And that he is a master of strategic planning, and his whole approach to this has been very strategic, and this is what we should be seeing. And now that we see that this great dramatic event that took place on Saturday night, this was amazing, and it is actually proof that the president is able to play multi-level chess and is doing it very successfully.
You're listening there, friends, to the voice of Ilana Friedman and Colonel Jim Warshak. I have to tell you, this was a tremendous conversation. We learned so much here, and I'm so thankful to have both Jim and Ilana with me here to talk about this year. Now, I got to tell you a couple of things here. When you hear Ilana wrap up there, she's so good and so eloquent in her speak, in how she brought that forward. And it reminded me of a lot of things here, though. But also, when you hear Colonel Warshak, Warshak has been saying right along that Trump is a multi-level chess player. In fact, he was one of the first ones that told me that, quite frankly, to be with all due respect to everybody. He's one of the first ones that used that term that I heard out there. He called it, I think, five-level chess. Some days he even might have said 10-level chess. But the point is, the president, and here's the other thing Ilana says, it's so important. Don't lose sight of this, people. She says, okay, so Trump is playing the long-term game. Now, you do the math a moment, people, right now. What politician can you size up in this country right now that is playing the long game? And then the people have the nerve to come out and say, this president's not patriotic. That is so outrageous. when you think about how many politicians can you tell me right now, can you size up on your one hand? Could you tell me, play the long term? Now, when we say the long term, you know what that means? Let me translate that for you. That means what's best for America, not what's best for the next election. In fact, this president doesn't ever do what's good for the next election. He just does it. Think about that. You see some of the things he's done before elections and you question why or how come, because he doesn't play to that. He's very unusual. So then you want to tell me about patriotism? And listen, I'm as critical to anybody as I could be. I'm a lover of America and the Republic. I'm not some fantasy land of Trumpville like some people are. That's not who I, and you know that out there. I see it like it is. I say it like it is. If you like it, great. If you don't, too bad. But it's the truth. And the truth here needs to be exactly what we've laid out here today. The Trump doctrine is significant. We will be talking more about that Trump doctrine ahead, because this to me is a game-changing strategy. And I'm telling you people, this is huge. You know, yeah, the saving of our men and women, the blood, that's powerful. That goes to my heart. That goes to my soul. But also, people, the save of our treasure also should go to our hearts and our minds and our brains, because that allows us to do more back here at home. It allows us to have the most powerful military in the world, but it also allows us to repair our infrastructure and be ready for tomorrow and to be innovative and inspiring and be the country we can be. That takes money and might as well. And that's where we should be spending some effort. And the president sees that. So I got to tell you what, my hat's off. I applaud what this president, not because he's Trump. He could be Smith, Jones, Fred. I don't care who he, because he's doing the right thing. And that's what should matter to all of you. It's what matters to me. It should matter to all of you if you're an American or a patriot or you can understand what this means. So he's playing the long game. That, friends, means that he's doing what's right for America. And you see, most everybody in the establishment doesn't do that. And it's sick. And what does that mean? I don't know. You figure it out. Does it mean they're less patriotic? You figure it out. Does it mean they don't love their country? I don't know. You figure it out. Does it mean they're willing to lottery and do the, play this off as a lottery game because it builds their own coffers or their own ego? I don't know. You figure it out. Because he's doing at least the right thing for the long-term strategy of America. That's the Trump doctrine, and we will be talking about that more and more in the future here. Big day for America. Let's celebrate this day. Let's celebrate this week. Let's celebrate this moment of what this means should mean to every man and woman here. God bless America. God bless this president, and may victory continue forward. It's time, friends, to get involved and get loud.